Good morning, everyone. Morning is Saturday, December 15th, 2018, and we welcome you to our Bible study. We are recording from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent, Plainfield, New Jersey, the United States of America. And I just wanted to let you know we are considering having a Bible study next Saturday. Some people have expressed an interest. If you've already made plans or can't come, that's fine. But so anyway, if you're interested, just we will keep you posted. And now we will begin with Mike from New York.
Thank you. The reading is from a book by Alice Orgain called Distinguished Characteristics of Mary Baker Eddy's Progressive Views of Science and Health. And from the chapter, God Crowned Woman, Revelation 12th chapter. It would be well to read carefully Science and Health, pages 559, line 32 to 572, line 18, before considering these comments. And the reason I chose this was because I had found what I thought was a lot of good stuff in this book of hers, and I just want to make sure that any source that is being used is loyal to Mrs. Eddy, and I thought that was a very express sign of loyalty.
Okay.
Thank you.
And of course, Mrs. Eddy further refined that concept of loyalty. And how did she say that?
Follow me.
Only insofar as I follow
Christ.
Right. Yes. Which is humblest of ways.
I feel also when she said, you must learn to love me more, that also speaks to that loyalty.
Most definitely.
Yeah.
And acknowledging her as the woman in the apocalypse, which we do. So. Okay.
I actually did a little more research on Alice Orgain because I didn't know anything about her. And it's a quick biography. Alice Lucille Cartwright Orgain was a student of Christian Science in New York City when Miss Mary Baker Eddy was founding Christian Science on this planet. Mrs. Orgain was a practitioner listed in the Christian Science Journal and devoting her every moment to the study and practice of Christian Science. Mrs. Orgain acquired each new edition of Science and Health as it was published. She may have been the one responsible for the republication of the first, second, third, and six editions of Science and Health by the Rare Book Company in New York City.
Thank you. That's really interesting. Could you post that somewhere for us?
Yes, actually, it comes from the Mary Baker Eddy Mary Baker Eddy Science Institute, and which is I Googled it through Alice Orgain, but I can send that to Jeremy.
Thank you very much. And I do know Alice Orgain was good friends with Ralph Gerardi, who was the head of the Rare Book Company. If it was once in New York City, it came to New Jersey. And you see, perhaps he did have, through her, every copy of Science and Health. But he had, he said Rare Book, he had a wonderful collection of Mrs. Eddy's works and other early workers. And we got all our books from him. We always dealt with Ralph Gerardi, and then he passed on, and his nephew Jerry took over. And then my understanding is they sold it to David Keeston, who had his collection, which I'm sure is of great value. So thank you. I didn't know really much about Alice Orgain. I do have a lot of her articles and writings, but I frankly haven't a lot of time to study them, so thank you.
that it's something called the comparative edition, where Terry Flynn, who was responsible for the Alice Orgain letters, went through every edition of Science and Health, tracing all the changes. It's 28 volumes, tracing every sentence and every paragraph as they developed through the editions. Right now, Marjorie Morgan's group has it in England. It was sold to them a few years back, but it's called the Comparative Edition, and it's incredible, and I wish you had it.
Thank you, Royce, and if you could please send that information to Jeremy. We need to know all these things, where things are. There was also, because there was someone out in Texas who had gotten the Carpenter collection, and my understanding was he claimed to have written that just what you were describing, all these volumes of every single thing of how Mrs. Eddy changed each edition, and he wanted to sell it for some huge amount, which was declined, but...
I think this is being confused with what I just said. I think there is just this one thing that Terry Flynn, who was from Dallas, put together, and he was the one, again, who put out the Alice Orgain letters that we can get.
Thank you. No, that's his name, Terry Flynn.
Terry Flynn. Yes,
yep,
he's gone now. He's not with us right now. He's
right, I know he did pass on. Someone else called me, a friend of his, about this. But my understanding was he did it. But, okay, thank you for clarifying that. It was Alice Orgain. Okay. All of these things are important because this is the correct history of our movement, and it we mustn't lose it, and it must be back. Thank you very much, Royce.
No, Terry Flynn did it. Alice Orgain didn't do it.
Terry Flynn did do it, but, okay, go ahead.
He did the comparative edition, that's what he called it. There's supposedly two copies of it. I think one is clearer and better than the other, and they're both in England right now.
They're in England, okay.
Okay.
Is Marjorie Morgan still alive?
Yes.
You know, we met her once when we were in England.
Okay.
Met her and John, Mrs. Evans, went to their home, had dinner.
Awesome.
So anyway, but we have not heard from them in a very long time. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, Mike.
Wow, that's awesome.
It is awesome. I was searching for those answers, and thank you for giving them to me. Thank you so much. All these pieces, it's like pieces to a puzzle that's coming together. So thank you, Royce and Mike.
Yes, I'd be very interested in purchasing one of those volumes. Anyway,
we were hoping it would go digital so we could all have it, but...
Well, then it can. But
the original plan was to put it all online. Helen White wanted to do that because at one time these volumes passed through her. She bought them from Terry Flynn at one point and had them, and she wanted to put it all online, but that didn't work out.
What was that name? Who?
Helen Wright. Helen Wright is the one whose bio Mike just read from, and she wanted to put all 432, the 28 volumes that Terry Flynn did. Helen wanted to put online to make them available to the world, but that didn't work out. So the volumes went through the hands of David Keeston. They were then put back into the hands of a friend of Terry Flynn, who is not a Christian Scientist at all. And when Terry passed on, then this friend sold the volumes to Marjorie Morgan.
Wow. Okay, he's the one who called me and wanted to know if we would want to buy them.
Yeah, they were
up. I should have. I couldn't do it. They were going to go for $100,000. And they were sold for
$15,000. Oh, wow.
Who are the Morgans?
You tell them.
Morgan.
Well, they were very active practitioners, right, in England. John Morgan wrote the pamphlet True Vision. And
which is on our website.
Yeah, they did a lot of healing work in England.
And they studied John Dorley's work a lot.
Yes, they were John Dorley.
He also taught in, no, not John, I don't think, but Marjorie.
John Morgan, her husband.
John Morgan passed on a number of years ago, and Royce just told us Marjorie is still around. So.
Yes.
But so John gave a lot of lectures in South Africa, too.
Yes, he did. Now, if you have any information as how to reach Marjorie Morgan, I'd be interested.
Yeah, we'd like to contact her.
Yeah.
Okay.
Very interesting. Goes to England, too, so. Good. Thank you very much.
Thank you. All
of this is coming together. I was so fascinated in what happened to those. Now we know. And who knows? Maybe we can purchase them from Marjorie Morgan.
Wouldn't that be wonderful?
It would.
Next time Gary goes to London, I'll bring an empty suitcase.
An empty trunk. Okay, Mike. Thank you.
Very good. That's absolute wonderful information. Because this book that I'm quoting from, L.S.R. Gain, ties together Revelation, Church Manual, plus Science of Health in a very wonderful way. Plus, there is a book she did on the manual, which I haven't touched yet, so that'll be very interesting. Okay, so the topic for today is understanding Revelation 12 and Bible readings were Revelation 12, 1 through 17, emphasis on 1 through 10, but now 2 through 10. And I'm going to just read a quick synopsis from what we covered last week, which comes from Reverend Kratzer's book, Revelation Interpreted. The first clause of this verse, this is verse 1, I should read that, sorry. Verse 1, and there appeared a great wonder in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun, and the moon under her feet, and upon her head a crown of 12 stars. The first clause of this verse is equivalent to John saying, I became conscious of another great revelation symbolized to me as woman clothed with the sun, etc. The woman symbolizes the Christ idea, generic man, the spiritual idea of God. She illustrates the coincidence of God and man as the divine principle and divine idea. That's a quote from Science and Health, page 561-22. Although the woman represents the Christ idea, she represents that idea considered more especially in its feminine phase. Quote, as Elias presented the idea of the fatherhood of God, which Jesus afterward manifested, so the Revelator completed this figure with woman, typifying the spiritual idea of God's motherhood, unquote. That's from Science and Health, 562. The feminine element, a representation of mind, is divine love. From the standpoint of human experience, love is the mother of truth. Human beings are ignorant of truth until they learn it. Before they can learn it, they must desire it, that is, love it, and obey so much of it as they have already become acquainted with. Quote, he that doeth the will of my Father, he shall know of the doctrine, whether it be of God, unquote. So speaking from the human standpoint, St. John represented the Christ idea as the woman, as a mother, ushering truth into the mental life of humanity, the realm of understanding. Quote, heaven, unquote.
Thank you.
You
know, it's interesting. You have to love it. You have to want it. You have to desire it. When Carpenter came out with all his books, and especially the more advanced, like Precepts, and people were worried, well, people aren't ready for these books. But he had a trust that those who needed it and really desired it and loved it and were ready for it would find it. And to anyone else, what?
This wouldn't mean anything.
Exactly. It would not mean anything. I used to think that if I ever had left this church, all these books would eventually mean nothing to me. Especially the Carpenter books. The reason that I love them so is because I'm here and I'm working all these issues out, so they're very real to me. Everything he says is like, wow, I get that. Yes, yes, yes. But if you're not in that, it's like a bunch of mumbo jumbo. So in order to understand this science, in order to get it, in order to see it, in order to have this spiritual sense, you have to have this yearning for it and this love for it and a willingness to drop everything for it. What is that, the parable Jesus tells? The pearl of great price.
Yeah. Sell everything for it.
Sell everything for it. That means...
And buy it.
And buy it.
And buy it.
And right. It is worth buying, Mrs. Eddy says. And it just happens that it becomes the most important thing to you, whether you absolutely have to sell everything or whatever is sort of not important. It's the fact that it pales in comparison, and you would be willing to, because this is the only important thing to you.
You at least have to put everything else under your feet.
On the altar to God.
On the altar.
On the altar.
Selling everything to me, I took it was to be really ready to relinquish anything that's of a human, material, whatever, selfish, mundane, as worthless. And once that's cleared out, the way is open for this great pearl to have a resting place.
Yes. There are a few things I want to give you before we get into this. One is, it's been on the carousel, God's Nearness by Mary Baker Eddy, where she says, to know the what, when, or why of era is the destroy era. Students love to talk about God, but they will not handle the serpent. Yet the scriptures tell us, they shall handle serpents. We don't uncover Era enough. Era says, don't talk about me, talk about God. Now, I have found this, I was certainly in this state when I came here. Oh, Lordy, Mrs. Evans, the way she would discuss Era just threw me under the table. I thought you were, oh, you're supposed to be loving and just talk about God. It must be uncovered in order to be destroyed. And the tendency not to want to talk about it is just Era speaking to you. Let's not talk about it. Let's talk about God. And I still find it in some people. Oh, I don't want to hear that. Nope, nope, nope. Don't tell me that. And the reason is because they're a bowl full of jelly. I know, because I was one. And I didn't want to hear it because it terrified me. So if it terrifies you, that means you need to hear it and you need to come to grips with what you're afraid of and realize it's nothingness. Otherwise, basically, you are useless. I know some people who have left this church because of our frank discussions. They just couldn't stand it. They couldn't, you know, it was too terrifying. They didn't want to talk about the era. And then I was up a good part of the night, and some of it was telling me in the morning I had to go back to the Dixon letter, which I did. And, you know, I've read it many, many times. It's been on the carousel. But I didn't realize it's totally about Revelation and how to deal with the latter days. And he says, there is no protection and no virtue in ignorance of evil and its phases. Again, there is no protection and no virtue in ignorance of evil and its phases. Each step of spiritual revelation is met by a phase of animal magnetism. In other words, evil claims to reveal in exact counterfeit its phases to contradict the revelations of truth as all. It claims to be just as true as truth. These claims must be met and mastered by truth, just as Moses, by the more spiritual understanding of power, caused his mental concept of serpent to swallow up the serpents of the magicians and the wonder workers of Egyptians. Oh, excuse me, the serpents of magicians and the wonder workers of Egyptians. You've got to know what air is trying to claim in order to destroy it. And there's no getting around it. And, you know, I thought about Gideon's band. What was one of the first texts?
Afraid.
Afraid. Afraid. So this isn't for the
faint of heart.
It isn't for the faint of heart. And what we are going to discuss is not the faint of heart either. And then, so I urge you all to get back to your Dixon letter, because we'll probably discuss parts of it again today. But this is what the whole letter's about. The other thing is, I wanted to read a couple of things from, or three things from Mary Baker Eddy, the Christian healer. The first is on page 156, where she is saying, just prior to one of her classes, she met with her students' association and impressed upon them, quote, the great need of constant and careful study of the scriptures in connection with science and health to enable us to follow our master. These two books formed one foundation on which rested the demonstration of Christianly scientific healing. Again, the importance of the Bible. And then on page 203, she's asked the question, on what is Christian Science based? And she replied, I can tell you on what I based my conception of religion and on which, so far as in me, rests. I have laid its foundation in Christian Science on the Ten Commandments, the 91st Psalm, the Sermon on the Mount, and the revelation of St. John the Divine. That is what our textbook rests on, those things. And so, how important it is we get into it and understand it. And then this, which I found fascinating, about the 91st Psalm. And the reason I bring it up is because the 91st Psalm, in many ways, is the answer to all of this sort of horrific stuff that's going on in Revelation. It's where you dwell. It's where you have to abide in order to survive these times. She says this, and this is on 192. Earlier in the year, in February, Mrs. Eddy had addressed the meeting of church members in Concord. Her talk focused on the 91st Psalm, which she considered one of the foundation stones of the Christian Science religion. She said that this psalm, quote, contains more practical, theological, and pathological truth than any other collection of the same number of words in human language, except the Sermon on the Mount of the great Galilean and hillside teacher, end quote. She went on to say that the first verse of the psalm emphasizes an essential point of Christian attainment, dwelling in the secret place of the Most High. It goes on, but, you know, many of you, certainly those I work with, I've told you to memorize this psalm. Well, the reason for that, and it goes absolutely hand in hand with the teachings of Christian Science. So we fill up ourselves with these truths, and then we replace all that is false, all our human beliefs, with the truth of our being. And this is what will bring in the millennium. It will slay the red dragon, and it will spiritualize all of mankind so that they can see this truth, this revelation. So,
awesome. I'd like to add page 363 of Miscellaneous Writings, where she says, I foresee and foresay that every advancing epoch of truth will be characterized by a more spiritual apprehension of the scriptures that will show their marked consonance with the textbook of Christian Science, Mind Healing, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures. So every advancing epoch, she said, would show the closer relationship with the Bible and science and health. And I think that fits exactly with what you were just saying. Also, I wanted to add something else that I feel is very important, and then I won't talk anymore. In the last issue of the Banner, a book was mentioned called Between Two Towers. I would highly recommend this book. It's by Ted Say, S-E-A-Y. And what it uncovers about the BOD and the world government is an uncovering such as I've never seen before of that connection between the two towers of the false church and the false government. And the ISBN number I have, which I can give you later, and it's called Between Two Towers by Ted Say, and it was mentioned on the third page of the last Banner. And I got it yesterday and couldn't put it down. It uncovers evil in an incredible way along the lines of how we should do it, like you just said. So thank you, and I'm not going to talk anymore. Thank you.
Thank you, Royce. I had mentioned that book when it first came out in the Banner, and then it was not for sale. So are you telling me now it is for sale? You can say yes or no.
Yes.
But only yes or no.
Yes or no, right?
Yes, but it can be a little difficult to get as it's print on demand. I got it from Barnes & Noble, and the manager there, who I know, ordered it for me as a print on demand book. And I'll give you the ISBN number right now if you want it. Would you want me to give it to you now or later?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. The number is 9781987010015. That's 9781987010015.
Thank you.
I see you can actually get it as a electronic book also.
Oh, wow.
And right away.
The cover is lovely. So I don't know if electronic book, you know more about that than I do. So I sign off.
Get that right away, and I'm sure Jeremy, who finds all things, get it for us somehow. Well, thank you very much. I was interested in that book for the exact same reason. We need to know the workings of animal magnetism. They've been going on in our nation. If you go to the next chapter of Revelation and the next chapter in the Craster book, he calls the two beasts as what, Bruce?
Sorry.
He calls the two beasts the organization, the ecclesiastical despotism, the organization of church, and the organization of government.
Two towers.
Yes, the two towers. And
exactly.
He recommends a book called The Beast, which I ordered. And in that, it's about the government early on. I think it's in the 20s of Denver, Colorado, but it's going on today. I couldn't read all of it because it's too, you know, I didn't want to take in that much negativity. But all you have to do is read the introduction, which tells you how corrupt any government, any kind of government, excuse me, or any kind of organization, excuse me, organization is the problem. Can be. And if we don't understand this, we are sound asleep as Christian Scientists. And once you do understand it, you will understand what is going on in our government. You'll know who's who and what's what and why is why. And if you don't, you just aren't getting it yet. Because hypnotism, as the Dixon letter brings out, hypnotism, mesmerism is in effect. It's working. And part of how it works is through the media, so you're bombarded and bombarded until you believe whatever they say. So you have to have your spiritual sense attuned. And when you do, you won't be afraid. You will feel a clarity and a peace and also an understanding of how to handle the red dragon and the beast, the two beasts. So, Mike, it's your turn.
First, I want to say that, Royce, keep talking, please.
Yeah.
I think it's a lot of great information, and I do have to put in a quick advertisement. Mrs. Singletary described coming to that in the Dixon letter is exactly why everybody should do a Bible study, because you ask the questions, and by the end of the week, you're wondering why you ask those questions, because you know the answers that you didn't know. But then you get illuminated a lot more from quote-unquote random, but God-given things like Mrs. Singletary shared with us, and all these pieces come together and give you a much fuller meaning to everything. Okay, and let's go now to the... Oh, you know what? I actually have to... Something that I just found, which I think ties in what Mrs. Singletary just said from Kratzer, book, page 227, and this is Revelation 16:13, which says, And I saw three unclean spirits like frogs come out of the mouth of the dragon and out of the mouth of the beast and out of the mouth of the false prophet. And Reverend Kratzer points out that the dragon, devil, is hypnotism, New Age type of beliefs. The beast is civil misgovernment, by legalizing materia medica, and the false prophets are the worldly church, and that's blind faith and shrines and relics, and that's what they, this is how they try to draw everybody away from God, because this is healing by hypnotism, New Age, legalized materia medica or blind faith versus using God for true healing.
Thank you.
So, does anybody want to read Revelation 12:2?
I'll read it.
Thank you.
And she, being with child, cried, travailing in birth, and pained to be delivered.
And what was the child?
It's Revelation.
Open Health, Christian Science.
Yes.
Christian Science, yes.
And what does Mrs. Eddy say in Science and Health on page 562?
She says, also the spiritual idea is typified by a woman in travail, waiting to be delivered of her sweet promise, but remembering no more her sorrow or joy that the birth goes on. For great is the idea, and the travail portentous.
Paul is describing the Zeti and the coming of Christian Science. We all know how difficult it was and that the red dragon was waiting for it, wasn't it?
And what happened to her when she was writing the first volume?
She was a scribe under orders.
Yeah. And where did she live?
In Lynn, right? Lynn. In an attic? I think she wrote in an attic.
Yeah.
Didn't she go from boarding house to boarding house during that?
Yes.
Time?
Yes.
She
had nowhere to lay her
head. She was kicked out of several places.
Wasn't it her sister that said if she stops writing it, she could stay with her?
Her sister said if she would give up this foolish idea, she could live with her.
And everywhere she went, she was There were incredible healings she was performing everywhere. But she was. I think in 1 year she lived 10 different places. And then at one point, yes, Lynn, where she wrote the book in an attic room. And we have that beautiful picture. There was a, what else?
The light coming in.
Yes, the light.
Coming in the window.
Overhead.
And with the light, the inspiration. And when the sun went down, it stopped. Till the next morning.
Here's a picture that the travail was portentous. It was threatening, ill omen. Didn't look good on the outside. But to think of the fact that she remembered no more the sorrow, but the joy that the birth was continuing to go on.
I have to comment on that, being a male and expert on childbirth. When our daughter was born, my wife refused any drugs, and it was a very long, extensive, protracted, travailing childbirth. And the picture of the three of us after the birth was completed, my wife is all aglow and sparkly, and I was just absolutely dead tired.
I know.
For doing nothing.
Doing nothing. Well, just watching is enough, right? Well, and that speaks to what Kratzer says. Those authors who write under inspiration can readily appreciate what is here spoken of. A line of thought develops in consciousness, and then one cannot rest or sleep until it is expressed on paper, or at least in speech. It just comes forth. Well, many of you have perhaps experienced that. Even in sometimes in writing a lesson, you get this inspiration. You just can't stop till you're done. It comes flowing through you. But it is always so important. And in Keystone's article, What Prospers Healing, he brings out the fact, if you understand that science and health is impersonal, and Mrs. Eddy would be the first. She said she didn't write it, didn't she say that? She was a scribe under orders. This is the word of God, just as the Bible is. It's the word of God speaking to you. And that's why it's so important to see her as the woman in the apocalypse, as part of this, I call it a golden thread that has gone through history. All the prophets, Christ Jesus, and it continues now. It continues now when the truth, the remnant, is being protected and the truth is being spoken and revealed. Nothing personal. God working. So when you see it this way, it changes everything. If you see it as just some nice little woman writing an interesting book, well...
I learned something new that I had never known in the house on Broad Street, I think it's called, from the Longyear Museum.
Yes.
It said that one of her people she was boarding with was absolutely astounded, because sometimes she would gather up all the papers at the end of the day and then rip them up.
Well, I forgot that. I have seen those CDs from Longyear are very, very good. If you haven't seen them, you all should see them. It's worth ordering. You can get, I don't know, there's three or four of them. I think they're four now. They're very well done. So, thank you, Mike.
To go along with what Mike was saying, I have read that papers would fly everywhere, and that's why the first edition had some misspellings, because she was writing so fast, listening to God, that she just wrote, and then later she had to work on the punctuation.
Actually, there was no misspelling of her account. What happened, I also learned from this video, was that it is so incredible, because the type was set, and it was so screwed up, so they would have had to redo the whole thing. So what she would have to do is, if it was a three-letter word, she would have to correct it with a three-letter word that would fit in there, so they didn't have to redo the whole thing. And she went through the whole of science and health doing that.
Thank you. Yes.
Thank you.
That's right. Absolutely. we must understand the opposition to this great work. I mean, one thing I read, I don't know which edition it was, but the printers lost it. And she said that she had on the sackcloth of mourning. I mean, can you imagine all that work and they lose it? And then someone called or needed help, someone who was dying, and she said she had to put on the wedding garment, and she was able to, and healed that person. But this is the requirement of scientists doing this work. You can't let yourself think. You had to rise up to meet that need.
She did.
And she did. But I want you all to know now, too, we are getting low on the Eustace book. And so we are working to have it printed. And there's opposition to it. This is a wonderful book, and we were entrusted with it. I mean, wouldn't it be awful if we ran out of copies? And we don't just want to make a paperback. We're going to make a copy that's like the original, and maybe even a little bigger so the print is bigger. But there is opposition, so all of you are to be praying for the fulfillment of this book to come to fruition, so it will be beautifully done, easy to read, and available to all mankind. The price of it will have to go up, but it's worth it. Right? Anything else, Carol?
I just wanted to add something very quick. And building of the Mother Church, the original, in Mother's Room is what they called it, eventually became the Mary Baker Eddy, Reverend Mary Baker Eddy's room. But she added a picture. It was a gift from herself to the church for this room. And it was a large oil painting that measured 6 feet by 5 feet of the little rocking chair covered with black hair cloth in which she sat while writing Science and Health. And it would seem impossible for such a room as this to afford space for such a large picture. But it was, arrangements were made, and they put lamps around it, and it was placed, I think, from on the floor. And it almost made it look like another room. But I just thought that was pretty profound, that and all the stuff that was in that room, this was her final gift, and it overpowered the room, and it was a message to me she was giving. And I have no idea where this picture is now.
But where did you say it was originally put in the mother's room?
Yeah. She sent it specifically to be put in that little room, which was 15 by 18. I believe in the picture is 6 feet by 5 feet.
And I think that is a room you're not allowed to go in.
Yes.
But I've never heard that story. That's very interesting.
And this story came from the Armstrong book, and it was a book that she had edited and improved. So she, everything that's in that, at least 1910 or before, had been approved by her as being information that she wanted out.
Wow, thank you very much. And Linda, we're finding all these things out because our next Liberator, the title of it will be Prayer in Stone, which is the Mother Church, the building of it, and all it represents. What does the word occultism mean, or occult?
Hidden.
So we are going to just take this and expose everything, all right? Because once it is exposed, when ERA is found out, it is what?
Destroys itself. It's two-thirds
destroyed, and the final third
destroys itself.
Yes. Okay, Mike.
Any more on this subject?
On verse 2.
Verse 2.
Go to three.
One thing that from Alice R. Gaines' book, this is the demand of the God-crowned woman upon human conception that causes her child to be, quote, caught up unto God and to his throne, unquote. Mrs. Eddy interprets as, quote, to be found in its divine principle, unquote. And that's from Science and Health. Okay, anything else, or shall we go on to 12:3?
Yeah, let's do 3. And there appeared another wonder in heaven, and behold, a great red dragon, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and 7 crowns upon his head.
Hey, you all should have been studying, so...
So what's this great red dragon?
This is evil giving forth its most fearsome outward appearance as it can. When error gets cornered, it gets more fierce. And this paragraph in Science and Health that follows, about marveling at discord, whatever, and then she gives a great, continues on with a great description of the appearance. Follows, why should we stand aghast at nothingness? But it, it tells, evil tries to put forth its best picture, no matter how fearsome and awful it looks, still doesn't have any principle behind it by which to stand.
In Science and Health on page 563, she says, the great red dragon symbolizes a lie. The belief that substance, life, and intelligence can be material. This dragon stands for the sum total of human error.
Yes, thank you. And it goes on, the 10 horns of the dragon typify the belief that matter has power of its own, and that by means of an evil mind in matter, the 10 commandments can be broken. Now, we know, that in other places, I know that it puts the Ten Commandments outside their buildings. And what happens?
They get defaced.
Yeah. Or they get ordered to take them down. What did I send you, Jeremy, about the state?
Oh, yeah, that place is that we're featuring the Golden Rule, right? They wanted to put a satanic thing there saying knowledge is power with like a hand with a snake around it and stuff like that.
And they are doing it.
Yeah, quite a few states that approved it, which I think is not only is it foolish from like our sense being at this church, but it's foolish from a government sense because the Golden Rule is just like a common sense thing to live by, whereas satanic, do what you will, that is not in law. So just that should have been enough for them to say, yeah, whatever.
Well, it's the serpent from Genesis.
Yes.
That was allowed to grow.
And what was the tree that they wanted to eat from?
Good and evil. Good and evil.
Knowledge of good and
evil. The knowledge.
Evil.
So this is where Satan is getting its little logo.
Well, as I had read from what Reverend Kranzler said about Revelation 16:13, was the beast, which is civil misgovernment. So it's the usage of these different things that the churches... and government and everything else in between that is opposing Christian Science and the true view of God.
Thank you.
Mrs. Eddy says, the first idolatry was what? Faith in matter. Somewhere else she says, society has rendered faith in drugs the fashion rather than faith in deity. This is all worshiping matter and all the false beliefs that go along with it.
And in so doing, you're breaking the first commandment, probably all of them. We could spend a few sessions on the Ten Commandments. We won't have time here. But they are, if Mrs. Eddy based her textbook on that, partly on that, it's highly important that we know it. That, Sermon on the Mount, 91st Psalm, and this, Revelation. So ask yourself and look around as to where the Ten Commandments are being broken. I mean, thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. But what is all this lying that goes on in the media? We watched a movie once called Shattered. What was it about, Jeremy?
Oh, Shattered Glass, yes. It was about this man who was a journalist, and I don't know, at their paper, it just came up that there was this loophole where he could just start telling bigger and bigger lies, and it was sort of a little bit before the internet when he started doing it, so people weren't able to research it that well. So he would do all these things, and
he made up stories.
He made up fantastic stories. Everyone thought they were so interesting.
And what he had to back it up were just his notes, which he made up too. So. But then the internet came along, and then people were able to go on and start researching, and then they realized almost everything he did, or maybe everything he did, completely a lie.
The reason he got away with it for as long as he did is because his stories were so interesting, so fascinating, so entertaining, and it just appealed to put this crazy sense about being fascinated by something instead of questioning, is this really so or not?
Yeah, the magazines or whoever he wrote for had trouble, you know, they didn't really want to hear that they weren't true because everything was so popular, and he was such a nice guy. He was really sweet. And so somebody came in, knew, and it takes somebody new to come in and look at it objectively and say, good grief,
this is an illusion.
Yeah, this is not true. And so he was brought down, and rightfully so. But anyway, this bearing false witness against your neighbor, I read recently one of the commandments of many, but where malicious gossip, I think it was the Greek word for gossip or something, was had to do with devil, the diabolicism or something. Anyway, it was devil. Malicious gossip, false telling, not checking your facts. We have news on 24/7 now, and who has time to check all this stuff? So they throw all kinds of things up. And then later they might say, oops, that's not true, but who reads that part? By that time, you might have ruined someone's reputation. So be very, very careful what you take in. Another is the Sabbath day and keep it holy. You know that's not being done. I remember years ago being in California, and I came from New Jersey where blue laws were obeyed. And what was that?
Could not shop on Sunday.
Yeah, stores couldn't open.
Yeah, all the stores were closed on Sunday. I couldn't get over. I'd wake up on Sunday and go to church, but then all the malls, everybody's out shopping. It seemed really weird and wrong to me. But now everybody does it, and you think it's just great. Well, anyway, think about these Ten Commandments. Sometime we will have a session on them.
We shouldn't have idols. That's very big.
Very
no
big.
Idols. Right.
Yeah.
Right. So this belief, this faith in matter, has grown 7 heads and 10 horns. It appears to be insurmountable. So powerful that it's taken for granted. How many people question it? And look at the medical profession now. Look at the drug industry now. You can't turn on the television without seeing an ad for drugs. Or
for free.
Can't send your kids to school without getting a note saying they got to be immunized against this or that.
Do being worshipped is what is being was
it
being
is.
Done.
Exactly.
Taking the place of the worship of God. But remember, one with God is the majority. And I love, I can find it also in the article, God's Nearness, where Mrs. Eddy says, and this will make a good watch message, but know and realize that good is omnipotent, evil is impotent. Evil is not power, not mind, and nobody has any power to accomplish evil of any sort. Keep that with you, and just know it. We don't have to know where these treatments fall, but we should be knowing throughout the day that evil is not power, not mind, and nobody has any power to accomplish evil of any sort.
So don't be impressed. Don't be intimidated. All these heads and horns and crowns, don't worship them.
I find it interesting. Go ahead.
No, I think that's why Christian Science is just, what will save the world, because it's telling us that evil has no power to create anything. So the sickness, the depression, the whatever discord, is the mirage. And it's beautiful how Mrs. Eddy and Mrs. Wilcox really explains it all in the Word Made Flesh. It's worth reading and reading and reading, I think.
That's an incredible article, yes. She really lets you know the illusion of it all. It seems real, but it is not. And that's why we don't have to fear it. And you see, when you think it's all real, see it to be real, you're under a mesmeric belief. That's the only way it gains its power, by mesmerizing you into believing it to be true. That's why we have to careful what we watch and what we take in. So, and the Dixon letter brings this out. It talks about being hypnotized and mesmerized. So,
I'm really grateful for the Dixon letter, because that was actually the first thing I read when I came here. My practitioner gave me a bunch of things, and that was the shortest one, so I went for that. And because of that, it really impressed me, the idea of counterfeits, and I'm always looking for that. So really grateful for that. It also impressed me that this mission is real.
That's true. We're not just...
Yeah, I'm not.
Is that right?
Yeah, more about ChristianScienceCCT.org, the Clear Correct Teaching website. It has all of Mrs. Eddy's journal materials and her sentinel materials on there. This is the Eustace website. Are you totally familiar with that?
Yes. I think you can also download some of the books, that, like the Blue Book, Red Book, and all that.
Yes, it's got some incredible things on there for anyone who hasn't seen it. It's Christian Science, CCT, for clearcorrectteaching.org.
Thank you.
But to get back to what we were talking about, Jeremy mentioned looking out for counterfeits now. How is it that you're able to identify a counterfeit?
You have to know what the real thing is.
Exactly.
You know the truth, yeah.
Exactly. Which is why we start each day reading the lesson, reading the Bible, reading Science and Health, so we fill our minds, so our consciousness, so much with the truth that the counterfeits will stand out like a sore thumb.
And declaring your right mind, which cannot be mesmerized, so you can see what's true.
Exactly. So this is why, and the lie is aggressive. It's not giving up easily. It will be aggressive if you let it, which is why we have to strive for the truth. You can't just sort of read it casually and expect it to defend you against the lie. You have to feel the danger. You have to really want the truth.
You can't be lukewarm.
And you can't dabble with it. You can't just sort of take it off the shelf occasionally and put it back on the shelf, you know, and go back to your, as Mrs. Eddy says, go back to your vomit.
Bible.
Or the Bible says, yeah. I mean, that's my, Mrs. Eddy said, this is a warfare. And I know when I first came here, I didn't want to hear about it. I didn't think that warfare was the right way to describe what I wanted in life. That you could, you know, kind of, I was looking for a path of roses.
That's why it was so important that article I was read earlier where it says there's no virtue in being ignorant about the ways and methods of evil. There's no virtue in that. You know, the temptation is they want you to talk about God instead of being a living example of the mind that is true and real, that exposes evil and lets it be destroyed, instead of step back and just talk about it.
So we've all enlisted. Once you've enlisted, there's no turning back.
And it will bring you the greatest joy, the greatest peace that you've ever known. Even though we're in a warfare, it's when you're doing it in this way, you get peace. I used to never have peace. I was anxious all the time. I mean, Jeremy will tell you that too, right?
Oh, yeah. Definitely. And I'm quite fine with it being a warfare, honestly, because my old life was not worthwhile at all. So there's no going back. And I think very often of a daily watch we had recently, I think it was 496, where Carpenter says we have to realize that we're aggressors, not mere defenders of the faith.
Yeah, because when ERA is aggressive, we have to be more so. And if you think not, well, you'll just be plowed down. So that's why Revelation says, ye are neither hot nor cold. I will spew thee out. I will, because when you're just neutral, you're sitting duck for ERA's suggestion. But when you're active in the truth and aggressive with the truth, when you're radiating instead of absorbing, it can't catch up.
And we do have the most potent methods, truth and love.
Yes. Love is the liberator.
I believe it was in the Unity of Good, I just saw Mrs. Eddy made the statement to the effect that we start learning mathematics not from the negative numbers, but from the positive numbers. So without the positive numbers, there are no negative numbers. I think this is what the Red Dragon is doing with the 10 and the 7, is it's not only the 10 commandments, but it's also the seven synonyms of God that it's opposing. Without the real, there wouldn't be that counterfeit.
Yes.
Good point.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, and the Dixon letter, he says, we are warned in the Bible, Revelation, that evil will fool even the elect. And many of the elect are right now deceived and drawn away from the right path. Thus, honest Christian Science, working and workers and practitioners are either finding themselves without work or busy with those who are not willing or ready for the real truth. But the fields are white with real harvests of healing, and these false systems must not reap the harvest to the loss and dismay of the true seekers after Christian Science healing and enlightenment. That goes with Gary's testimony. The false systems are going to fail. They will fail, all of them. They will end up destroying themselves. And the right, true, will reign, because in truth, that's all that's real.
So that's why we put it out there. Make it as easy as possible for people to find it. When they are ready for it.
Yes. We went to how many? Verse 3? Anyone else with anything on verse 3?
Well, speaking of lies, I think Hans Christian Andersen's book, The Emperor's New Clothing, is a perfect example.
I know. I used to be my favorite quote, fairy tale, I guess. That was so funny. Want to tell it, Mike?
You can tell it better.
He thought he had this beautiful outfit to wear, but he was being fooled. Someone just pretended they were sewing this beautiful outfit, but it was really nothing. So he's parading around the streets, the emperor, naked as a jaybird. And no one was, because he was king or whatever, no one wanted to say anything. And so, but then a little child said, "Look, he's naked." And then everyone starts laughing, and it breaks the mesmerism. Because he was mesmerized. He was mesmerized in believing he had clothes on when he didn't. And, you know, there was a while ago, Arthur, and I believe he had it posted, a link of these people. They were mesmerized. They thought they were swimming, and they were just on plankboards, and they were flailing their arms around, and, you know, they thought they were racing. And they honestly thought they were, and to those of us awake, it looks so silly. But that's how believable it is when you're under that mesmerism. You actually think these things, and you will fight for it until something wakes you up. And what are the three things that will wake you up?
Laugh, cry, or get mad.
Laugh, cry, or get mad. That's why sometimes the practitioner has to do that. Patience. Get angry, laugh, or cry. So, I guess we're done for the morning.
Yeah, we covered
just a little bit.
Two verses.
Yeah, we pushed ahead with two verses. So.
And Mary didn't cover a little bit of four last time, so we're at least three and a half.
Yeah, we're.
Yeah, last time I was trying to get some salient points, and I didn't know we were going to come back to it. So.
Yeah, we're ready to start four next time.
Okay, well, and thank you very much, Mike.
Thank you all. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Mike.
Yes. Have a good day, everyone.
Yes, thank you.